on to the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake
McClure.
And in the background, you can hear the cats dancing on the snare drums.
Caterwauling.
And the...
They have their claws out as they dance on the snare drums to get the... Right,
they're squalling as they dance on the snare
Otherwise
drums.
Known as drums and bagpipes.
Right, which is, bagpipes traditionally, by the way, are the sound that is made when a Scotsman squeezes a sheep's stomach.
It's also used quite traditionally when people are about to get chopped to pieces with large pieces of iron. Large chunks of iron being used to chop pieces out of people.
Well, it just basically was, I actually witnessed it happening a lot last weekend.
What, chunks of people?
No.
All put together, hopefully.
The sheep's stomach's getting squeezed, squalling that goes on from the dead sheep.
The gathering of the clans,
In Salado. And no one, to the best of my knowledge, was getting chopped up by pieces of iron.
Well, it's not so traditionally used anymore. It's more of a Victorian era, this is pretty music use for it now. It's not so much used before charging into battle.
Really?
Yeah. So, okay. If you've just tuned in, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. If you haven't just tuned in and you're not listening to us at all, it's still the Personal Wealth Coach. We have a caller coming in.
And we indeed have a caller on 773-1400. And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a 401k question that I'm sure will lead to other discussions related to 401k loans, but... let me ask my question. I'll get off and listen to you guys answer, and then you can take it any direction you want to, of course.
Okay.
I had a 401k with a company I worked with. I left the company. I had a 401k loan, which they allowed me to pay quarterly as long as I kept current on it. In the last 45 days, they changed 401k providers. And now they tell me that the loan needs to be repaid within 60 days instead of the what was agreed to as a repayment plan. Question is that a possibility everyone should be aware of? Because, you know, it seems like I had an agreement to pay it at a certain time, a certain way, and then that changed when they changed the providers.
Could I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you have a written agreement that they signed and you signed on the payback?
No, I do not.
Then you don't have an agreement.
Yeah. Let me come back a second. One of the big marketing pieces of 401ks, which is just absolutely wrong, it's one of those things that needs to be said again.
He wanted
again
to hang up and let us take
Okay, I want to tell him something beforehand.
Okay.
Is that the idea... Because it may add to your question. The idea that you're making a loan from yourself is wrong. You're getting a loan from money set aside for you by a corporation. It still technically belongs to the corporation.
Yeah.
You signed an agreement that was a compensation agreement where you agreed to take less income, and they would take that extra income and put it in an account for your benefit. It does not belong to you at the moment. It needs to be treated like it will at some point, but it doesn't right now. So when you take a loan from that, you're taking a loan from the company, and they can change it unless you have a written agreement, however they see fit.
Right. That's it. In essence, you borrowed money from a company. They said, based on our current policy, you can pay it back over this period of time. That's what actually, if you go back and read the agreement you had, I'm sure this is what it will say. However, we can change that at any time.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, I have an email from the HR department saying that I can pay it back that way. It's not, however, a signed written agreement. It's a, you know, it is a written agreement in that it's an email, but it's not, signed.
Oh, that's interesting. If you have an email from an HR department that tells you you can pay it back over, let's say, a three-year period.
Yeah.
And they come back to you, and this is one of those things where if you decided not to pay it back, you probably would have a leg to stand on in court.
You could go to court over it, but you would have to go to court. And that's...
Meanwhile, the IRS could hit you with penalties for
early withdrawal.
Right.
Yeah,
the good thing is I will not get an early withdrawal penalty. I got two choices. I can pay it off and or I could take a disbursement since I'm over, you know, 59 and a half.
Right.
I wouldn't get a penalty, but I would have to pay taxes, and
yes.
I wouldn't really
do you still,
want to take it at this point.
Do you still work for the corporation?
No, I do not.
Okay, well.
Ooh, that's
okay.
Interesting.
So there's a couple of things here. First off, you don't have to stay on the line for anymore if you don't want to. If you want to continue to be part of it, that's fine. But
I'll let you guys handle it. I'm more than listening right now. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for the call. First off, let me address the whole concept of taking a loan from a 401k because it's a tough one. It looks good. It looks like you're getting a really good interest rate on money from yourself. The problem is, just like I said before, it's not money from yourself. It's money that's used as collateral that is set aside for you, but you're actually getting a loan from the plan. And second, it's generally a bad idea unless you just can't get money anywhere else and you absolutely need it. Because the money, the vast majority of the money in the 401k is going to be money that you have not paid taxes on, unless it's a Roth, and that's a different scenario. But if you have not paid taxes on the money and you take a loan out, okay, the loan now comes from money that's your collateralized in the 401k. You use it, you spend it, then you turn around and pay that loan back. The money that you're paying back, you've already paid taxes on. You paid whatever your tax bracket is. You paid your employment taxes on it. All of that's been paid, and you're putting it back into the 401k now.
Mm-hmm.
When you pull it out again, you're going to get taxed again. You'll get taxed twice on that money. Now, if you think it's going to be your other choice is a loan for 40% interest versus taking a loan from the 401k. The knee-jerk reaction is, I don't want to have to pay 40% interest on a loan, except that's what you're roughly doing if you're in the 20% tax bracket. If you're in the 30% tax bracket, it's even worse. It's a 60% loan because you're going to get taxed on it now, and you're going to get taxed on it when you take it out later.
Generally speaking, there's a couple of points that are very important here on the macro scale. Number one, taking loans from 401ks, as Jake said, unless you have it's an absolute earth-shaking emergency and you have nowhere else in the universe to get the money.
Now, this loan doesn't show up on your credit report.
Right.
It just shows up on your IRS report.
Taking loans from a 401k is a bad idea for several reasons. I don't know what the interest rate they charge you on the 401k loan. Do you have any idea what the typical?
It's generally right around 2%.
Okay, so they charge you 2%.
Plus you got to pay taxes going in and taxes coming out. So it winds up being
but there's something else here.
Massive amounts.
Last week, let's just say, and I certainly don't recommend you have your money there, but let's just say that you had that money that you borrowed in an S&P 500 index fund that perfectly matched the S&P 500. This is all hypothetical stuff, obviously. Last week, that loan cost you 3.27% per week.
Because it wasn't in the market.
Right. And that, talking about loan sharking.
So
I don't know that even loan sharks charge 3.27% a week.
If you have a long-term investment portfolio, it's for long-term investment type needs. Retirement, maybe big goals later on. And if you're talking about a 401k, that's retirement. You don't want to be taking lump sums out because the taxes are going to go way up above where you want to pay.
There's also a second issue here that you've just run square into. And that is, if you leave employment and you leave your 401k where you were previously employed and they decide to change plans, it can really foul you up. For example, let's just say you started taking systematic withdrawals to live on.
Right.
And they changed plans. It's entirely possible, and this has happened many times.
I'll give a great example of one.
What?
Enron.
Okay. But this is the point. For 6 months, they allowed no withdrawals from the plans at Enron.
Right, exactly, because they were switching plan administrators. They were switching from one company to another for 6 months. It happened to be a really bad 6 months. It was 6 months in which Enron went from a really good company into bankruptcy.
Well, it went from a company everybody thought was really good to one that everybody realized really wasn't very good.
But if you had Enron in your 401k because you worked at Enron, well, you just had to ride it all the way down.
Yeah, but even if you didn't have individual stock in there, the point is you don't have control of where that money is or what funds are offered. And if you're on vacation and they switch plans, they will automatically put your money someplace else.
So what's the alternative?
Rolling it to an IRA where, and if you don't think, and the arguments are, well, the broker may charge you more at the IRA, odds are.
You can go to Vanguard and get no load.
Right. Odds are you can find a really good place to put your money in an IRA that you rolled over from your 401k that has as low or lower expenses and a much better selection of investments. And this is the key. Is under your control rather than the control of the company that you used to work for. Now, by the way, here's why it's crucial. This is my experience universally so far. The board of directors or the whoever is running a company is running that company to make a profit. They want to spend as little as possible on their 401ks.
Yeah.
So they are going to tend to find some place that will give them the 401k for free. When they give them the 401k for free, where they don't have to pay anything, that means they're charging you a bunch of money in the 401k, which you may not be able to see in any form or fashion, because in many cases the 401ks now are disappearing into entities that don't even have prospectuses, because they don't have to have a prospectus if they're in a 401k. So what they've done is they put them into these so-called trusts, and these cumulative trusts and so on, which have all this's and that's and the other in it, and they look really cool, and they pay, that in some cases, they're paying the company to be there out of your pocket, and you can't see it because it's non-transparent. So, but you never know when they're going to do that, and they don't have to inform you of what goes on inside of this fund.
There's one other thing, and this is one that won't bother the person that has the 401k, but it might matter a little bit to their heirs. At your death, if you have an IRA, there are a lot of ways that your beneficiaries can take the money. They can do a stretch. They can do it over a period of time. They can roll it over into a beneficiary IRA. There's a lot of things that they can do to help minimize the tax impact on the year of the death. In a 401k, the vast, vast majority of 401ks still want to pay it out as a lump sum in the year of death. And that's a massive tax hit to the people that are receiving the money. Unless the person's the spouse, then it's treated differently. But
yeah, if your beneficiaries are financially sophisticated and they know how to approach the 401k company to effect a beneficiary rollover, which is a real drill, by the way.
Yeah, it's not easy.
They can do it, but it is awkward and difficult, whereas if you have it in an IRA, you can set it up for them in advance using professional advice.
So as a quick answer that isn't really customized but generalized here, if you're over the age of 60, you've got a 401k with a loan on it. You're going to have to pay taxes on that money if you don't pay it back in. But depending on the size of the loan, it might be worth just doing it. That's definitely talk to your tax preparer on that to see if it's going to knock you into a higher tax bracket. But if you roll it over into an IRA, at that point, you just take withdrawals from it. You're not helping yourself by taking a loan from it. No. Really not. You're putting yourself in a complex situation, and the benefits are just not there.
Yeah, you're increasing your expense, decreasing your benefits, and increasing your risk. So that we lost. We had a caller on 773-1400. I was about to put you on the air. Hey, we want to get to the question that the guy asked last
hour. The last hour question.
The demographics of the United States, despite the bubble issue.
Despite the snake swallowing the egg of the baby boom.
Are extremely positive. And they're not positive because we're having a lot of babies. They're positive because we have a lot of immigrants.
Yeah. We have a growth rate of about 1%.
And the rest of the developed world is shrinking. China is shrinking. Russia is shrinking. The United States is growing. And it's not growing. I mean, we're not quite having enough babies in the United States to grow.
India is growing really, really fast.
Right. That's actually a problem.
Yeah.
In the United States, because we have relatively good immigration rates. I say good, not high, but good. We have a tremendous potential for us baby boomers in our old age to actually get paid.
Yeah.
If you want to...
There's another baby boom going on right now, demographically, by the way. The millennials and the Xers are having babies much later than they expected to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the demographics for the last year, you see a huge increase in the number of births.
There is a birth dearth in between. That's what it's called.
Right, birth dearth.
Between the baby boom and the echo boom, it's called. But this is the point. The reason I am confident about the future of Social Security, despite the projections of it going broke, is immigrants. Because when we have immigrants in the United States, not only do we get new people in to pay into Social Security, they tend to have lots of children. And when they have lots of children because they came from someplace where children are, there's a whole different view of children than we have here, then because of that, there's more people come into the population who start working and who begin to pay into Social Security so us old codgers can actually have an income in Social Security. Now, if we are in a position where we cut off immigration, which there's a lot of discussion about doing, it's going to be rough down the road. Demographically, the United States is the healthiest developed nation on the planet.
Yeah.
And we have a caller on 773-1400, and I'm going to try to put you on the air. We'll see if this works. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Oops. Now you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Oh, finally, I can hear you.
Yes.
Anyway, I have kind of an off-the-wall question.
Mm-hmm.
What is a bail-in, and should we worry about it? I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
A bail-in?
A bail-in. Would you define that a little further in context?
Okay. Yes, yes. Okay, these people that try to sell you gold all the time on the commercials and stuff, and also conspiracy theorists and stuff. Okay, I'll cut it to the chase. In Europe, in certain places, they take people's bank accounts to bail out the banks.
They did?
Well, in Greece...
Yes, in Greece.
Okay. So, you're talking about Greece.
Yeah.
Okay.
What
should we worry about stuff like that?
That's no. But we'll explain it, okay?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bail-in, it was recently coined, and it was only coined by a very few news media publications. It's not really a term that's used in economics. The term bailout is a really bad term, too. It's just really not a good term because a bailout isn't, as we were saying before, the Federal Reserve made the people that were getting bailed out pay them a lot of money for the bailout.
That would be a bail-in.
Yeah, well, that's sort of, you know, when people are talking about the bailouts, what really is happening is the bail-in.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, that makes sense.
So what happens in a bail-in is the Greeks were having bank issues. They had too much debt. So in Iceland, they did it as well. What they said is they said, all right, we're going to require some percentage of the money on deposit at the banks to help pay off the loans that are owed by the bank. In Greece, they said, we're going to do it for the loans that are owed by the bank, which are owed to the Greek government, which then owe Germany. So it was like this huge tree of loans that we're getting.
Basically, it would be a tax passed on deposits.
Right.
And that's literally what it was.
And Iceland said you've got a 20% tax on withdrawal of deposits.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take money out of the bank, you owe 20%. And so people left the money in the bank, which meant that the bank could take that 20% and use it as if it was theirs to pay off the loans, and then work at bringing it back in.
And if you left it in the bank long enough,
you would get that all back.
You don't get the 20%.
Right, the tax would go away and so on. So it's basically a stop withdrawing money type thing. So bail-ins, we don't really need to worry about it at this point. We're talking about debt a lot this episode. So I'm going to come back to this is the same question in effect, as the demographics question and whether or not the global debt issue is a problem. So let's go back to government debt for a little bit, because that's the reason why the Greeks and the Icelandic people had to use the bail-in term. They had to take money out of deposits. Our debt, the vast majority of it, Medicare, Medicaid, which is stateside, and Social Security, even the unfunded prescription drug benefit plan, can be changed in a moment's notice without having to take money out of people's pockets by the United States Congress. They can just say, we're going to move the retirement date, or we're going to say people that have in their portfolio more than $700,000 get a percentage of their Social Security taken away, something like that.
We just did that, by the way. Yeah. Your congressman just did that. There was a methodology where you, under the law, where you could file for Social Security at 66, for example, and you could then suspend, and as a result, you would get a higher Social Security payment down the road, and it would be really good for you. And that was part of the Social Security law, and it was a debt to the United States government.
And the way that debt is calculated,
abolished.
Right. The way the debt's calculated is a way that never ever gets paid. The debt is calculated as if it's a lump sum, and Social Security doesn't pay lump sums unless you're talking about that $255 at death. They pay a pension, which means that the lump sum, it's not a balloon note. It doesn't all come due at once. If you're talking about a 30-year bond, that has a maturity date. If you're talking about Social Security or Medicare, it doesn't have a date at which it all comes due. So those are important things to note. The Greek debt, the Icelandic debt, had a maturity date, and they had to pay it on that date or else. And there was no way of moving around that because they had to make the deal with the Germans. And the Germans said, no, you're going to, you will pay us.
You will pay us.
You will pay us. And so they paid.
Yes. And, well, not actually. They only paid part of it.
They paid part of it.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's Chris from Georgetown.
Hello, Chris von Georgetown.
We have ways of making you speak.
Yes. We have ways
say tick.
Of making you talk.
Say tick-tock. You
Chris.
Keep saying tick-tick. You say tick-tock. We will make you talk.
We will make you talk. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, have you ever heard of it's a fund that's called Circle Up, and it's a, and I think there's probably quite a few of them, is it?
Are you there?
I think we lost him.
I think we lost him. Circle Up? I think that's one of those things where you put money in a pool and people borrow money out of the pool and then they pay back interest to the pool, and it has some potential. Are you still there?
We heard him. Second.
Yeah. You still there? Hello?
Yeah, I got
you. We
lost
you circle
for a little
of fund. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, is it like a fund that people buy into, that like you have to be accredited investor and then they sell it? That other people can buy into it also? I just had heard about it because
it's considered a peer-to-peer lending service. So it's basically you put money towards it. It very, very similar to a savings and loan. Very similar to a credit union.
An unregulated.
Unregulated, though.
Uninsured, okay. Unaudited savings and loan operation.
Okay, so think credit union for a second. In order to get a loan from a credit union, you've got to be a member, right?
Right.
Okay, so you put deposit down, then they say you are now eligible for the loan. Where do they get the money for the loan? Well, they get it from your deposit and everybody else's.
They used to.
They used to.
Now they get it from a bank.
Right, now they go to a bank and get it. But they use your assets as collateral on that loan. And
right.
So they have requirements on that. But they get audited. There is a regulatory perspective on it. Peer-to-peer lending, whether it's called circle funding or crowdfunding, or there's a lot of other ways of looking at it, work really, really well when the bank system itself is not regulated. So if you're talking about India or China or a developing nation, it's a really good way for small businesses to get funded. The problem with it is that the fraud rate can be really, 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 and I can insert some more really, high.
Yeah, somebody can run off with the money.
An example of that in a not quite exact scenario, but people have heard of Kickstarter. Right. My wife is a musician. She's used that for funding albums and so on. But there is no contractual obligation on the part of anyone to pay that money back or to give what was purchased, because it was a donation given with a prize on the other end. Now, there have been some lawsuits, but the lawsuits really don't have a leg to stand on, and that there's not a contractual obligation. You said you would give them money, and you gave them money. In the case of a circle funding situation with banks, it's the same as if you got together with the people in your neighborhood. If Fred Rogers got the neighborhood together and the milkman gave a loan to the mechanic and all the way around and everybody put it all together and Fred Rogers had it in his house, what happens if Fred Rogers' house gets broken into? There are other security concerns. You follow what I'm saying there. So it works really well when there's no other alternative. But again...
Right, and I think that's a lot of the companies that I'm dealing with the job I have is that these guys are kind of, they're small CPG companies, and they're trying to find funding, and obviously banks don't want to do it. They look at it and say it's a bad risk, but there's other, these guys will look for different ways of funding, whether it's Circle Up, C10, or Able Lending, or some of these guys, and it seems to be a good way they're getting it, but it's an alternative way to get raise money for your company besides going to a bank.
Yes, and it's just, it's an area that you just have to, it depends on the fact that everybody trusts everybody else and people need to be really sophisticated, and the difficulty is that the risk level of putting money into those things is very substantial.
Yeah.
And that's the point. Yeah. As investors, we're more interested in the concern about putting money into it than the ease at which you can get money out.
Right. And the other side of that, and this is important, is it's very similar in so many ways to owner financing the sale of a piece of real estate.
Right.
They say, hey...
But no collateral.
Right. Even if there's collateral use, sometimes a circle lending has some collateral.
Owner financing. Sometimes circle lending has collateral, but...
Right. So what happens here is they think, well, this is a good way to give money and I'll get some return on it. Or on the other end, I can't get a loan at a bank. Well, the question is, if you can't get a loan at a bank, there's other risks involved. I mean, banks don't give loans easily right now. That's a known fact. They just don't give loans easily. So there is a gray area where the bank is just being obstinate. This is a good company. It needs a loan. But then you get into the area of, well, are we good at checking to see if it really is a good company, to see if they really do have potential for growth? And that's the due diligence side. The reason why I bring it up is that if the Circle Fund is not charging a higher interest rate than the bank would give, then they're eventually going to lose money. Big money.
Right. I just thought it's just an interesting way that some of the companies are looking, you know, entrepreneurship is really the finding ways to help businesses grow doing this. And there is a lot of risk, and I think that there's a lot of people that know this that do it. They invest in certain companies. You know, like, you know, a good example is Deep Eddie's Vodka was, you know, designed to sell, but a lot of people that invested early on made a lot of money off of it. But there was a risk. Mm-hmm. They knew if it didn't work out,
every company that you hear about where you make a lot of money getting in early, there's probably 1,000 companies where you lose all your money for getting in early.
Yeah. The state of Texas, in the last legislative session, allowed crowdfunding loans to operate. They haven't been very clear on the regulatory aspect of it yet. So there are some crowdfunding sources in Texas for real estate and for real estate development that have just come out. Most of them are in Austin.
But there's also what he's talking about is a little more formal,
right? And that's a formalized law enhanced thing that's just come out. What we're talking about with this, most of the organizations that you're talking about are based in Britain.
Are they really? Okay.
Yeah. So
I didn't know that.
So, and the reason is because they have laws in Britain to help regulate them. But if you're using British laws for finance in the United States, you're going to run into some problems.
Yeah, and if there's no other source, it's kind of like the loan from the 401k. If there's no other source and you're willing to take the risk, and
if you're on the end of getting the loan, it's a great place to get a loan.
It can be. but you can wind up, an entrepreneur can wind up losing their company.
That's correct. So you have to watch the contracts.
Okay. So thanks for calling. We need to get on to the question that we didn't answer last hour. Okay?
Right.
And have a good weekend.
Okay,
thanks for the call.
The question last hour was what's going to happen 20 years in the future because of demographics. And we didn't quite get that finished.
Right.
There is a pattern going on in the big wide world out there. And the pattern is that in Europe, they're just not having enough kids. And in China, they sure didn't have enough kids.
They've just changed that policy to two kids, which means that they're going to tread water instead of grow. They've already hit that shrinkage point so far.
But this is the point. Most of the people who were talked to weren't going to have two kids.
Right.
Because it's too late. Yeah. And you know, by the way, another little thing that's going on that reflects the demographics of China is there's a big crackdown this week in China.
Right.
On people trying to get money out of the country.
Yes, it's the underground bank, so speaking of ways of funding things.
The issue is that the people who have money in China, by and large, are doing anything they can to get money out of the country, mainly to get it into the United States, by the way.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons the dollar keeps rising. And they're trying to restrict money from leaving the country, and it's kind of like the Berlin Wall. Basically, if it's so nice there, why are people trying to get money out?
Right.
And the United States, our system... It's actually, and Britain to a degree, it's called the Anglo-American socioeconomic system, is working. And it's working well enough that we can have the healthiest economy, the healthiest large economy in the world, and at the same time spend an absolutely phenomenal quantity of money on defense against an unidentified enemy. Which nobody else is doing, by the way.
Right. No, the British are, and we are. That's it.
The French are starting to.
They have
the largest military force in Europe, and they want to build it bigger. But this is the point I wanted to make here is that the United States of America, first off, has a relatively low debt. Now, no, that is not what the politicians are telling you.
Mm-mm.
The Chinese debt, by almost any measure, the governmental debt in China is larger than that of the United States, which doesn't make a lick of sense if you listen to the politics and so on. Most of the Chinese debt is off the books, and we have to guess at what it is, but the estimates of it, and because it's state-owned industries that have this huge debt, because they were obligated to hire people and keep the economy going. So China has basically hit a wall. And the wall they've hit is they... in essence, borrowed a lot of money, mostly from their own citizens, but also from wherever else they could get it, to keep everybody employed during the recession. And they have huge state-owned industries that they use to employ these people and build huge cities that nobody lives in. But all that borrowed money in order to run an economy effectively has got to be paid back at some point. Just like the Japanese. Now, the Chinese and the Japanese are really, really good at leaving their money in the bank at zero interest. But if they ever try to take it out,
they're in a massive problem.
And what they've done is they've emulated what the Japanese done. And I wrote this in my newsletter. This is crucial. Folks, listen to this. If you recall back in the 1980s, the Japanese were going to take over everything.
Just look at the Back to the Future movie. It's
right.
Back to the Future, yeah. He's learning Japanese.
They bought Pebble Beach. They bought Madison Square Garden in Rockefeller Center. And when they sold them back to people in the United States, by the way, they sold them for a lot less than they paid for them.
A lot less.
Which was a positive transfer from Japan to the United States. The yen was pretty consistently at 1 penny per yen, 100 yen to the dollar. Now it's 123. The Nikkei stock average was 10 times the Dow. Now it's roughly equivalent to the Dow. So what we see...
Which means that Dow has grown 10 times more than the Nikkei.
So we've grown about 10 times what they have. They have been in a more than decade-long, 15-year-long recession.
We call it a depression. It's deflation-oriented. Right. It's a depression.
And the Chinese could easily go into the same position, by the way. Now, what does all that mean to you as an individual? It means that you're living in arguably the best socioeconomic system in the world today and arguably the best one in the history of the world. And I realize that you don't like that.
It's a lot easier
It's a lot easier to gripe.
Presidential election when there's not an incumbent to talk about all the things that are wrong. But there are a lot of things that are right. I mean, it is that whole Churchill saying about democracy being the worst form of government in
except
the world,
for all
except
the others.
For all the others. The United States, the debt system, the way we use our currency, the way we inspire growth through entrepreneurship, it's just a lot better than anybody else right now.
And so
it's still horrible. We've got a lot of room to work. We can fix a lot of things, but we're way ahead of the rest of the world.
Presuming we maintain roughly the same track we're on, which is, generally speaking, philosophically speaking, we fight wars someplace else.
Instead of here.
We pump money into the economy when it slumps, but we raise taxes and take it back out when it unslumps, which is, by the way, what we're doing. As long as we keep up that pattern, 20 years from now, the United States will be as much greater as it was. I mean, there's no comparison to where we were 50 years ago. We are the dominant power in the world and liable to continue to grow to be an even greater power. Unless, and this is a fair warning, unless we decide to emulate Europe and go to an austerity and xenophobic attitude towards the world,
stop approving free trade deals and close the borders.
Yes, yeah,
austerity,
right.
That could
and
lead us directly
pay
to
off
depression.
Our debts. Right.
Depression follows and collapse.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, the commodities are kind of confusing me lately. I understand that there's less demand for the metal commodities because we're not.
Nope. Well, sort of.
No, there's not actually less demand.
Not less demand. There's just more of it.
There's more supply.
Well, supply and demand, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a difference between supply and demand, obviously. The supply hasn't dropped. The right. economy is bigger than it was when the price of metals, copper and nickel and so on, were high.
Yeah. What's happened is the same thing that happened in oil, and this is actually in the newsletter as well.
Yes.
The same thing that happened to oil,
my newsletter this week.
To gold, to copper, is that it reached record highs when you don't adjust for inflation. You're talking about just absolute record high, fill in the blank, copper, oil, gold, doesn't matter. Now, if you adjust for inflation, it wasn't absolute record, but it was really high. So a lot of people got the same idea. If you saw the Discovery Channel series called Gold Rush, what you saw was a bunch of absolute amateurs. They didn't know the right side of a digger from the wrong side of a digger. Went to Alaska and made a profit in the first year digging for gold.
Yeah.
A lot of people did that. And if a lot of people go and become professional over time doing something, they get better and better at doing it. And if a lot of people are doing it, they come up with a bigger supply. So the price of gold dropped. The price of oil dropped. We developed new technologies to get the stuff out of the ground. Copper, gold, oil, we're coming up with a glut in supply. Now, if you look at the demand growth, the United States is asking for more copper. India is asking for more copper. China is asking for more copper than they did 3 years ago when it was at record highs. So demand is higher, but supply has gone up much faster than the demand.
So what was your question about commodities?
Well, that, I've just heard, you know, for instance, next week, I mean, this is rumor and everything, that the metal commodities will drop considerably. Now, I also understand that China is exporting some of their scrap commodities, metal commodities now.
It's always possible that they're exporting.
To importing them.
Well, they could export or import.
Their economy.
Well, if you look at it not as a government action, but rather as a corporation in China, it's a lot easier to understand. Just like if you look at oil exports and imports in the United States, you see that we import oil from Mexico and export oil to Mexico, and that doesn't make sense. You shouldn't it all be going one direction. No, because if you are a company in China and you've been buying scrap metal because the price of metal is really high, you've been buying scrap metal to refine it or to sell it to somebody else who was going to refine it, and then the price drops and you go, well, where do they not have scrap metal around? Because they're able to get already refined metal for a lower price. I have all this abundance of scrap metal that I've been buying and I've been hoping would go up in price, but it's going down in price, so I'm going to go to another country that doesn't have scrap metal and sell it to them. So they are exporting, but they're also importing. They're still importing, but they're also exporting.
Yeah, that's the answer right there. Then, and the bottom line to it is, I just wrote a whole multi-page newsletter, and most of it is about what you just asked.
Right.
So, yeah, give us a holler, and I'll be glad to send it to you.
We'll send it to you if you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, one other thing.
Sure.
If you've got time, I mean, you. This is obviously a big political hot potato right now, but I understand the demographics of the American people not producing, you know, the Russians or the French or the Germans and everything else, and the population growth depends on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
But
we're close to break even just for babies.
You're not frightened at all by Muslim immigration. I don't think the president gets up there and says we have the same values. I'm a retired Army officer. I've
mm-hmm.
spent some time in the Middle East. I spent some time in North Africa.
Right.
I'm not an expert on it, but
let me ask you. Can I ask you a question?
They don't have the same.
No. Let me ask you a question.
As we do.
Have you ever heard of Muhammad El Orion? He managed the Harvard Yale Endowment. He was the CEO of PIMCO for quite a while. He's a Muslim. He has the same values as you and I do. And
Churchill said in his 1899 speech, you know, there are some splendid examples, and I'm not, you know, not everyone's the same, but as they're different than we are, they have different values than we do. They treat their women different. They treat their
Hang on just a second.
They really have slovenly.
Hang on, can you hang on just a second? You made a lot of statements about a whole group of people. I've known quite a number of Muslims who treat their wives with a great deal of respect,
right?
Are very clean, who have indeed the same values that I have.
You can take a sect of Christianity and say exactly the same thing that you just said and have it be correct.
Absolutely. I'm talking overall.
You can't say that overall.
I mean, for instance...
It's like saying overall Christianity is a organization of love and not war, but I grew up seeing Onward Christian Soldier marching as to war. That is a warlike thing that when taken out of context, if a Muslim hears that, they're going to say, well, who is a Christian going to be fighting? It's the Crusaders.
Nope.
And if you flip that around and say, all right, well, that's just the basis of Christian belief that we're soldiers fighting wars, then it makes it not a loving religion, but suddenly a warlike religion.
If you go back just a couple hundred years, we were slaughtering everybody who wasn't a Christian on a wholesale basis. We were slaughtering each other as Christians. Yeah, but that's still Christianity.
We've changed since then.
Wait a minute. We'll go back a couple of decades to the fight, the troubles. The Irish Republican Army versus the Catholics versus the Protestants. If you go to parts of India, parts of Thailand, you have Buddhists that are the bad folks that are actually going around and vandalizing and attacking people for no reason. There are sects that are radicalized in every organization. And you can look right now, this year, in the United States, just look at some white supremacist groups that have tattooed all over their bodies Christ symbols.
I mean, basically, you guys are talking just like the mainstream media. You're talking about, you know, in a minute I expect you to bring up Timothy McVeigh. We're looking at overall...
You brought him up, I didn't.
Right.
You brought him up. We weren't going to bring up Timothy McVeigh. What I'm saying is that we're economists, okay? When it comes from the world of an economist perspective, we're not... The media is a very PC organization. But what it's trying to do is very liberal-minded in its PC-ness. We're looking at a very middle perspective of if you make these statements, if you look at the Homeland Security Department, the Department of Homeland Security has said that the worldwide Muslim population, the percent of Muslims that are radicalized is less than 1%. Okay? That's not... Not all Muslims. That's the Department of Homeland Security, and their job is to find radicalized people.
What nation has the absolute majority of all the Muslims in the world in it? Do you know?
Like Indonesia?
Yes. Yes. How many terrorist cells have come out of Indonesia and attacked the United States? Or Europe.
What, Operation Balinka, when they were going to blow up the 10 airliner?
All right, well, Turkey's a NATO organization. Turkey is a NATO organization. I mean, this is a country that is one of our greatest allies. They're in NATO with us. If someone attacks them, they'll attack us.
They wouldn't let the 4th Infantry Division.
Oh, now, come on.
I mean,
neither would Germany.
Germany wouldn't either.
Germany, at the French and, now what was it, the German and...
Hang on just a second. I'm gonna just say something to you. As soon as we start identifying religions and saying we are going to ban a religion or we're going to be anti a religion, we would start a war that would plunge the planet into the Dark Ages. I don't want to go there.
Our country was founded. Our country was founded based on immigrants from nations that had just had military coups take place led by those immigrants. The Roundheads, Oliver Cromwell, are the Pilgrims. They had just killed the royal family of England. They beheaded the King of England. They had done horrible terroristic organizations, if you're a royalist, and then deported to the United States before. It was colonies. And I'm bringing that up not to be PC, but to say that to make a decision based on a religion, to outlaw a whole religion, is wrong. We can definitely look. I'm not going to avoid saying the words radical Islam because it's a problem. It's a big problem. I'm not going to avoid saying the words white supremacists. But if you look at the number of deaths from radical Islam, and we're looking at this statistically, we shouldn't be afraid of it. We should deal with it. And as we have said, I said it this program, where we were 100% supporters of the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq. The fact that we were attacked and that the French were attacked, what we have to recognize, though, and this is very important, is if we take the concept of all Muslims are bad, then how do we deal with Syria? We just flatten it? Because there are very few Christians there. If you're just going to do a Christian war, then let's go flatten everybody but the Christians. And that doesn't make any sense, guys. Muslims are a big chunk of the world population, and yet we don't have, by any sense, the percentage of the population of the world causing a problem that would be if they were all problems.
We got about as many minutes of commercials as we have hours. I want to say one thing at the end of this and maybe get in the last word. The people who made the attacks in France, the majority of them apparently were Belgian citizens, many of them born in Belgium. And that kind of, the fact that we want to block immigration from Syria because some people from Belgium attacked in France is a bit of an irrational approach. Anyway, we're going to play some commercials. I know probably a lot of you are mad at us now, but that's all right. This is just the reality of where we are. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.